A Shepherd Looks at Psalm 23 by Philip Keller. Chapter 11. Surely Goodness and Mercy Shall Follow Me. Throughout the study of this psalm, continuous emphasis has been put upon the care exercised by the attentive sheepman. It has been stressed how essential to the welfare of the sheep is the rancher's diligent effort and labor. All the benefits enjoyed by a flock under skilled and loving management have been drawn in bold lines. Now all of this is summed up here by the psalmist in one brave but simple statement. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life. The sheep with such a shepherd knows of a surety that his is a privileged position. No matter what comes, at least and always, he can be perfectly sure that goodness and mercy will be in the picture. He reassures himself that he is ever under sound, sympathetic, intelligent ownership. What more need he care about? Goodness and mercy will be the treatment he receives from his master's expert, loving hands. Not only is this a bold statement, but it is somewhat of a boast, an exclamation of implicit confidence in the one who controls his career and destiny. How many Christians can actually feel this way about Christ? How many of us are truly concerned that no matter what occurs in our lives, we are being followed by goodness and mercy? Of course, it is very simple to speak this way when things are going well. If my health is excellent, my income is flourishing, my family is well, and my friends are fond of me, it is not hard to say, surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life. But what about when one's body breaks down? What do I say when I stand by helpless, as I have had to do, and watch a life partner die by degrees under appalling pain? What is my reaction when my job folds up and there is no money to meet bills? What happens if my children can't make their grades in school or get caught running with the wrong gang? What do I say when suddenly, without good grounds, friends prove false and turn against me? These are the sort of times that test a person's confidence in the care of Christ. These are the occasions during which the chips are down and life is more than a list of pious platitudes. When my little world is falling apart and the dream castles of my ambitions and hopes crumble into ruins, can I honestly declare, surely, yes, surely, goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life? Or is this sheer humbug and a maddening mockery? In looking back over my own life, in the light of my own love and care for my sheep, I can see again and again a similar compassion and concern for me in my master's management of my affairs. There were events which at the time seemed like utter calamities. There were paths down which he led me that appeared like blind alleys. There were days he took me through which were well nigh black as night itself. But all in the end turned out for my benefit and my well-being. With my limited understanding as a finite human being, I could not always comprehend his management executed in infinite wisdom. With my natural tendencies to fear, worry, and ask why, it was not always simplest to assume that he really did know what he was doing with me. There were times I was tempted to panic, to bolt, and to leave his care. Somehow I had this strange, stupid notion I could survive better on my own. Most men and women do. But despite this perverse behavior, I am so glad he did not give me up. I am so grateful he did follow me in goodness and mercy. The only possible motivation was his own love, his care, and concern for me as one of his sheep. And despite my doubts, despite my misgivings about his management of my affairs, he has picked me up and borne me back again in great tenderness. As I see all of this in retrospect, I realize that for the one who is truly in Christ's care, no difficulty can arise, no dilemma emerge, no seeming disaster descend on the life without eventual good coming out of the chaos. This is to see the goodness and mercy of my Master in my life. It has become the great foundation of my faith and confidence in Him. I love Him because He first loved me. His goodness and mercy and compassion to me are new every day, and my assurance is lodged in these aspects of His character. My trust is in His love for me as His own. My serenity has as its basis an implicit, unshakable reliance on His ability to do the right thing, the best thing in any given situation. This to me is the supreme portrait of my Shepherd. Continually there flows out to me His goodness and His mercy, which, even though I do not deserve them, come unremittingly from their source of supply, His own great heart of love. Herein is the essence of all that has gone before in this psalm. All the care, all the work, all the alert watchfulness, all the skill, all the concern, all the self-sacrifice are born of His love, the love of one who loves His sheep, loves His work, loves His role as a shepherd. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd giveth his life for the sheep. Hereby perceive we the love of God, because He laid down His life for us. 1 John 3:16. With all this in view, it is then proper to ask myself, is this outflow of goodness and mercy for me to stop and stagnate in my life? Is there no way in which it can pass on through me to benefit others? Yes, there is a way. And this aspect is one which eludes many of us. There is a positive, practical aspect in which my life, in turn, should be one whereby goodness and mercy follow in my footsteps for the well-being of others. Just as God's goodness and mercy flow to me all the days of my life, so goodness and mercy should follow me, should be left behind me as a legacy to others, wherever I may go. It is worth reiterating at this point that sheep can, under mismanagement, be the most destructive livestock. In short order, they can ruin and ravage land almost beyond remedy. But in bold contrast, they can, on the other hand, be the most beneficial of all livestock if properly managed. Their manure is the best balance of any produced by domestic stock. When scattered efficiently over the pastures, it proves of enormous benefit to the soil. The sheep's habit of seeking the highest rise of ground on which to rest ensures that the fertility from the rich land is redeposited on the less productive higher ground. No other livestock will consume as wide a variety of herbage. Sheep eat all sorts of weeds and other undesirable plants which might otherwise invade a field. For example, they love the buds and tender tips of Canada thistle, which, if not controlled, can quickly become a most noxious weed. In a few years, a flock of well-managed sheep will clean up and restore a piece of ravaged land as no other creature can do. In ancient literature, sheep were referred to as those of the golden hooves, simply because they were regarded and esteemed so highly for the beneficial effect on the land. In my own experience as a sheep rancher, I have, in just a few years, seen two derelict ranches restored to high productivity and usefulness. More than this, what before appeared as depressing eyesores became beautiful park-like properties of immense worth. Where previously there had been only poverty and pathetic waste, there now followed flourishing fields and rich abundance. In other words, goodness and mercy had followed my flocks. They left behind them something worthwhile, productive, beautiful, and beneficial to both themselves, others, and me. Where they had walked, there had followed fertility and weed-free land. Where they had lived, there remained beauty and abundance. The question now comes to me pointedly, is this true of my life? Do I leave a blessing and benediction behind me? Sir Alfred Tennyson wrote in one of his great classic poems, "The good men do lives after them." On one occasion, two friends spent a few days in our home while passing through en route to some engagements in the East. They invited me to go along. After several days on the road, one of the men missed his hat. He was sure it had been left in my home. He asked me to write to my wife to find it and kindly send it on to him. Her letter of reply was one I shall never forget. One sentence in particular made an enormous impact on me. "I have combed the house from top to bottom and can find no trace of the hat. The only thing those men left behind was a great blessing." Is this the way people feel about me? Do I leave a trail of sadness or of gladness behind? Is my memory in other people's minds entwined with mercy and goodness? Or would they rather forget me altogether? Do I deposit a blessing behind me? Or am I bane to others? Is my life a pleasure to people or a pain? In Isaiah 52:7 we read, "How beautiful upon the mountains are the feet of them that bringeth good tidings, that publisheth peace." Sometimes it is profitable to ask ourselves such simple questions as, do I leave behind peace in lives or turmoil? Do I leave behind forgiveness or bitterness? Do I leave behind contentment or conflict? Do I leave behind flowers of joy or frustration? Do I leave behind love or rancor? Some people leave such a sorry mess behind them wherever they go that they prefer to cover their tracks. For the true child of God, the one under the shepherd's care, there should never be any sense of shame or fear in going back to where they had lived or been before. Why? Because there they left a legacy of uplift, encouragement, and inspiration to others. In Africa, where I spent so many years, one of the greatest marks left by any man was that of David Livingstone. No matter where his footsteps took him through the bush and plains of the great continent, there remained the impact of his love. Natives, whose language he never learned, long years after, remembered him as the kindly, tender doctor whom goodness and mercy had followed all the days of his life. There remains in my own mind boyhood recollections of the first stories I was told about Jesus Christ as a man amongst us. His life was summed up in a simple, terse, but deeply profound statement. He went about doing good. It was as though this was the loftiest, noblest, most important thing on which he could possibly spend his few short years. But I also was deeply impressed by the fact that his good and kindly acts were always commingled with mercy. Where so often other human beings were rude and harsh and vindictive of one another, his compassion and tenderness was always apparent. Even the most flagrant sinners found forgiveness with him, whereas at the hands of their fellow men, they knew only condemnation, censure, and cruel criticism. And again, I have to ask myself, is this my attitude to other people? Do I sit up on my pedestal of self-pride and look with contempt upon my contemporaries? Or do I get down and identify myself with them in their dilemma and there extend a small measure of the goodness and mercy given to me by my Master? Do I see sinners with the compassion of Christ or with the critical eye of censure? Am I willing to overlook faults and weaknesses in others and extend forgiveness as God has forgiven me and my failings? The only real practical measure of my appreciation for the goodness and mercy of God to me is the extent to which I am, in turn, prepared to show goodness and mercy to others. If I am unable to forgive and extend friendship to fallen men and women, then it is quite certain I know little or nothing in a practical sense of Christ's forgiveness and mercy to me. It is this lack of love among Christians which today makes this church an insipid, lukewarm institution. People come to find affection and are turned off by our tepidity. But the man or woman who knows firsthand about the goodness and mercy of God in his own life will be warm and affectionate with goodness and mercy to others. This is to be a benefit to them, but equally important, it is to be a blessing to God. Yes, you are a blessing to God. Most of us think only God can bring a blessing to us. The Christian life is a two-way proposition. Nothing pleased me more than to see my flock flourish and prosper. It delighted me personally no end to feel compensated for the care I had given them. To see them content was wonderful. To see the land benefiting was beautiful. And the two together made me a happy man. It enriched my own life. It was a reward for my efforts and energy. In this experience, I received full compensation for all that I had poured into the endeavor. Most of us forget that our shepherd is looking for some satisfaction as well. We are told that he looked upon the travail of his soul and was satisfied. This is the benefit we can bring to him. He looks on my life in tenderness, for he loves me deeply. He sees the long years during which his goodness and mercy have followed me without slackening. He longs to see some measure of that same goodness and mercy not only passed on to others by me, but also passed back to him with joy. He longs for love, my love, and I love him only and because he first loved me. Then he is satisfied.